shovels. But I was through digging up in the south, and I stopped and digged it. And when I wrote the story, I called it Digging the Deep South. And I mentioned the third thing, Brad Deans.
Yeah, well, he's executive vice president of that bank, been that for years. Of course, the bank is largely owned by that Kemper family. And, so.
The Kempers, I knew Mr. Kemper, he was from Kentucky, and his boy is the one who won that insurance company, which evidently very good.
Well, now, you, I see in your card, you're a freelance writing these days.
I have written a series. Paul Bellamy, the plain dealer, was one of the finest friends that I ever had.
Bellamy.
I live in Cleveland. Paul Bellamy is the head of the bar.
Someone sent me from Cleveland the other day an article that, in a way, was of all the flattering things ever said about me. This one was written by a man named Phillips. Is there a fellow named Phillips that writes on the plain dealer? Anyway, he's a Cleveland plain dealer, and this fellow was telling about a friend of his that died in the wool taffeta and who went to Washington. And he was in Washington. This was a story I read.
Yes.
I just threw it away from the story, but it was. This man went to the hearing where I was called down before the defense committee recently, and I just told him my story. It was there an hour and a half, I guess. That way I left. Now that's all there was to it, except that this fellow, who went down to Washington on his visit, died to old time, and was converted. Now he was a complete Eisenhower man, and this Phillips was telling his the reactions of his friend. Mm-hmm. And go on through. He said it's encouraging. He said, since I've been talking this way for some years, and none of these guys would believe me, for one of them to go down and do it all on his own. Everybody was a very, very flattering story, and out of the blue, you see.
Yes.
I don't know who he's talking about. No, he didn't even name the man he's talking about. So it was just it was an odd story.
So
I remember it. Just made me think of it because King thank
you. I know very few people. I do know where you I don't know how much you know about freelance writer, but freelance writer who comes and writes serious labor, he's persona non grata.
Yes.
The folk temple held him right better than that. And the man who gets the thing said, well, I didn't think of that idea. So I went and presented Bellin the idea of writing up. See, I said, these industries, see, I'm a renegade Southern Democrat. My first book was cast for Wilson. And the blood on my spectrum will never come off. You start with the first time. And I go in there and say to Bellamy, these industries have just had hell beat out of 3 years. But I don't give them credit. Bellamy, he'd like to do the 14 lay toss in one. I said, all right, well, and he talked about, I just reviewed French Walker, boys, hard-working French Sarnia, working all of them, that took 5 minutes an hour, started working, now you've got 12,000 people work for him. And I just wrote a simple story out, story out, and talked about it. Then I went to Buffalo, and I did the same thing to people knew. Then I went to Gannettsville, at Rochester, and I started in Youngstown to write folk stories. I've written 125. And I have enough stories now to have another book published in the Cleveland Boys. And it's progressive.
Well, I'll tell you, I not only have been out of this country a very great deal since 1920, but on top of that, my life has been such as to keep me away from American publicity values, except, let's say, in its major elements. I've known who the great politicians were, what their theories and ideas, and followed them, known whether I liked them or disliked them. But take such things as the NEM. When you come down, the NEM has today, I am astounded to find, a reputation for the economic Tories, that the endorsement of the NAM is a kiss of death, that NAM is just terrific. whole point. Almost every American meeting or finding one of these individuals, Blondie and him, finding his story, will applaud it. They believe in success. In my opinion, the NAM is never going to regain its collective position in the minds of the American people. Let's take XYZ belong to the NAM.
Yes.
Now, that's a complete membership. You can make them believe, finally, X is a great fellow. Y is better, and Z is just out of this world.
Yeah.
But the three of them together, as long as it's NAM, are never going to be anything.
That's wonderful. I've never heard of it.
Well, it's because... Well, I tell you, I have lived a life, of course, particularly the last 10, 12 years, that's had to do with a great deal of propaganda. And the... When you go to mind of propaganda, I think you can do it with respect to an individual or to a specific incident, anything that is not labeled. Where a label has become wicked in their minds, that's what I say is really incurable.
Yes.
I don't believe that you're ever going to make people in the United States believe that the initials NAM stand for. And that is sort of some revolutionary thing we can do. I mean, by ordinary propaganda or educational means, or you want to call them, I don't believe it can be done. But on the other hand, I have no cure for this thing, because so many of those people, the NAM, hell, they were my great friends, and I believe in them, I work with them. But when you say the initials, NAM, you're saying to the reactionary exploiters of common toilers.
You're just as right as you could be. I wrote a story of Bob Woodrow, the form.
I knew him, though. I met him. He took me on a, took me once I was on the Erie.
Yes.
And he took me right here.
We became good friends. I was in his home at the Ealing. We used to pour applications to back us. And when I was writing the series, he said, don't let them get the label NAM on you, or you're done for. You're right. And yet now I've been seen striking the 50th anniversary for the Youngstown Chief of Beef Company, Frank Grinnell, the large steel company in the United States. 50 years ago, five men, and they didn't know much about the steel. All right, you follow out the formula that for the business maker and all the people who go to support the worker, multiply their 30,000 by 10. That's the formula. 300,000 people have jobs today and enjoy American civilization, so-called. Because those five men mentioned there in the end.
Yep, that's right. But of course, here's the point. I was at a meeting the other night. All right, you were in town, did you happen to go to that goddamn meeting before the American Academy of Political Science?
No.
Well, there was Byrd, in a way, debating against Paul Douglas. Although it wasn't really a debate.
Yeah.
Each of them had an article, subject to develop.
Yeah.
Now, but one thing that came in, which they were definitely on opposite sides of it, was big business. Now, Paul Douglas went on ahead and raised up the shibboleth of big business, taking over big government, whereupon you would have fascism or Nazism. And he sort of argued, although he didn't develop fully his argument, which is strange that he'd taken an hour and 8 minutes to talk and being a college professor in his early days. He didn't develop the definite danger of prove the danger of big business taking over big government, but he did more or less hint that at least government had to stay bigger than business. Well, of course, anyone can agree to that in this influence because you've got the power of your representative bigger than government. Don't let that occur. I mean, bigger than business. Well, anyway, but because we have been the home of big business, because it is developed here, it is got certain features for us that have established our position, helped us win the war, made our prosperity. And while he was developing this thing, Douglas, sitting next to me, turned to me and whispered, but he's failing to prove that without big business, we wouldn't have had even more.
Yes.
Don't you see? So therefore, when you talk in this story of five men meeting and doing this, Some of these, don't move, I just...
Oh, I
just... Some of these people would say, there is no proof that if we'd allowed this to develop a little bit more by a number of small companies, there wouldn't have been 500,000 people making a living at that.
Yes.
So, the man sort of beat his head against the stone wall apart. I think it is perfectly proper for you to make the statement. 300,000 men today have jobs and are making a living because of the activities of this business. That is good. And they have this business spread over. But I don't believe that a fellow ought to make his entire argument or his whole premise of a story or a book around the fact they did meet, because then someone will say, I pierced that. At least it's an unproved proposition. I pierced that and the whole story falls down.
You pierced it before I arm. I didn't catch you on.
Well,
what is the thing?
The postulate that hasn't been proved. I say that because five people met, a business develops. 300,000 people have jobs. Now, but if we make that cause-effect, which becomes cause for effect, someone else will say, but if those five people hadn't met, the very nature of our business would have demanded more steel, we'd have gotten it in this way, and now we'd have 500,000 in it. So that was a backward movement rather than the forward movement you're making.
Yes.
But I say, therefore, such statements as that are unprovable, should be only an aside or almost a digression in a story. But those five...